Teach me your ways, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth, and I will praise you, O Lord, with all.
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, an examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Joining us again in the studio is David Marley. David is an adjunct professor of American history at Montgomery College in Maryland. Last week we discussed some misconceptions regarding our founding fathers and the founding of America as a Christian nation. And this week we'd like to talk about the rise of the Christian right as a political force in America. And David, since your dissertation focuses on Pat Robertson, maybe you could share some of your perspectives on the Christian religious right with us today.
The one big thing about the Christian right is that there's a great continuity to it. In all the great movements, social movements in American history, there have been a strong religious element to it. And sometimes they've been reactionary, sometimes they've been very progressive. And some people look at the Christian Coalition as kind of just an anomaly in this bizarre thing, or the new Christian right is something really, an aberration, when really it's not. It's part of this big long line going back for a couple hundred years in American history. And the other big thing is that a lot of scholars, especially historians, always say the Christian right is just about to collapse. It's just about to crumble. They lost the latest election. They're going to run back to the woods. And it's just not true. It's been here. It's always been here. There will always be a religious movement as a part of American culture. If you've ever read the book, it's a great book called Culture of Disbelief by Stephen Carter. Fantastic book where he defends the use of religion in politics and in law and in every part of American culture, saying it's kind of pointless to debate about whether the church should be involved because it already is. And is somebody less valid because they use a religious argument to make a point? Does that make their point not valid? And he says that's ridiculous because it's been that way for centuries and it always has been. And just how the Christian right may tend to whitewash American history to make it look very Christian, some on the other side whitewash it to make it look less Christian than it is. And the key is to find that balance.
Where do you see the balance?
The balance between what exactly?
It's secularity and it's Christianity. And perhaps with that, it's secularity, it's Christianity as distinguished from its overall religiosity. So can we distinguish in a pluralistic sort of situation Christianity from religiosity generally, and especially those things which we classically associate with evangelical religion, which is where we sit, at least as Interface. And how would you cast that balance between secularity and religious expression and influence in America?
There's much more religiosity. I think people focus on that. When indeed a lot of the great social movements in American history have been very intensely spiritual. There's an article written in a history journal by a man I think is a really good professor, a man I've worked with a lot, who's taught me quite a lot, named Leo Rebuffo. Had an article a couple years ago called "Why Is There So Much Conservatism in the United States and Why Do So Few Historians Know Anything About It?" And he talked about how, in his tongue-in-cheek way, talked about how historians don't like conservatism, so they don't study it. And that happens a lot with religious history. Think of the civil rights movement. Can you imagine the civil rights movement without the role of the churches? Can you imagine Martin Luther King being very secular? And a lot of times he is portrayed as kind of secular now, when indeed religion was the basis for everything that he did. If you want to look at a movement that had an interesting pull between the two, you look at the Prohibition movement, getting rid of alcohol, where it was started for a lot of reasons, but there were very liberal church groups, liberal religiously, that were very much against having alcohol, and there were very conservative groups that were against having alcohol. And then there were people who were secular who thought that most people who drank were immigrants, and they didn't like immigrants, so get rid of all the alcohol. So you see these three different groups with three different ideologies coming together for the same cause. And every once in a while, you do see that. That didn't happen in the Civil Rights Movement. I have a copy of a sermon by Jerry Falwell given in 1964, at the height of the Civil Rights Movement, where he talks about ministers should never be involved in politics. It's not anything they should be doing, and your job isn't to be marching in the streets. You should be preaching the eternal gospel. 10 years later, he had completely abandoned that and was having I Love America rallies and was excited to be sitting in the White House with Ronald Reagan.
Okay, this is another issue you've brought up then. How is it that these kinds of issues have crossed over as Christian issues? What's the process not only for Jerry Falwell, starting with Christianity is not of this world, is concerned with overtly evangelistic, gospel-oriented kinds of things, and then switches or at least incorporates within itself, integrates into it, an I love America stance. Is Christianity, in your opinion, that integrated to the American idea and the American experience? And how is it that the idea of Americanism per se has been incorporated into religious expression as almost a mandate if you are going to be a conservative Christian, that somehow this involves a conservative agenda? We noted on the last show that the Puritans were very conservative in their theology and very liberal in their social economic stances, their political stances, and in fact were non-American and conservative enough to where they in many ways could have seen themselves as opposed to the development of an America as being separatist from England, but saw themselves as English. So here you have people who are not American as the icons of Americanism, and that somehow their religion was the incorporation of Americanism into their faith. And yet this is not the case that we find historically. So how did that switch happen, that America became part and parcel of the Christian dialogue?
We've asked a real big question.
Yeah. And no one... Please define universe and give two examples.
Say there's several men that I know that they're basing their whole tenure on trying to answer those very questions. But just to kind of speak to things that I'm maybe a little more familiar with, the reason why the Christian right talks about how America was always so Christian was because it helps them build their case and get their own political power. They can say, look at how Christian America used to be. Look that we used to have prayer in schools. We used to have all these great things. And look how beautiful America was. And Thomas Jefferson wanted all these great religious ideals. And we've fallen away from it because one great thing they attack is the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's taking away all our freedoms. And the ACLU is suing everybody. And if you only give us power, if you only let us have our say, we'll put America back to the way it was. And so history gets used a lot. As you know, the famous phrase, history is always determined by those that survive. You know, whoever wins the war gets to write the history. And so that's kind of how the Christian right is trying to win the war. They kind of also have their spin on things, and they want to be able to explain. And a lot of them, to be honest, I believe legitimately believe what they're saying, because a lot of them aren't historians. And so they kind of not color the things, but they see what they want to see. Not saying that there aren't other people that do the exact same thing from the other point of view, but it's something they're doing. There's always been a big tension, but there also has been a lot of Christianity, obviously a lot of Christian influence in American culture. To talk about American history without bringing in elements of Christianity is impossible. And if professors are doing it, they're really missing the whole story. Think about the First Great Awakening. That was the first great movement that made these colonists see themselves as Americans. And you think about the abolitionist movement. If it wasn't for Christians, conservative evangelical Christians, to use a more modern phrase, the abolitionist movement would have remained very small. And you look at things like the Prohibition movement, things of that nature, had a lot of strong Christian support, things like that. So we look at those things, especially abolition and the creation of America, and we say, well, those were good things. So those were good Christian things. But we look at prohibition and some of the agenda of the Christian right today. Some people don't like those things, so they see them as bad, when really it's been Christian involvement the whole time.
How about you sketch for us? Because, I mean, the terms liberal and conservative are thrown around quite easily. Can you sketch for us briefly what it is politically that a conservative is and what it is politically that a liberal is? And then perhaps throw into that some socioeconomic stances as well. So what is the conservative agenda or key points in the conservative agenda for politics and for economics and for social action? And then what a liberal agenda on these things would be.
Okay. Briefly stated, conservative viewpoints are very much less government. less government interference in the economy, less government interference in people's personal lives. Generally, that doesn't always play out, because if you think of some of the things the Republicans try to do, the conservative Republicans, very much invasive into people's lives, which violate some of their policies. Very much into local control, less taxes. The ironic thing is a lot of liberals look to people like Henry David Thoreau, who were very liberal in a lot of his ideas, but he said the government that governs best governs least. And he had a lot of very conservative principles, but those get ignored because we look at the other things that he did. So that's kind of a very conservative outlook. They tend to be very, I wouldn't say more pro-American, but they tend to be more nationalistic. America as opposed to other countries, instead of saying America in league with other countries. So you see, that's why America for generations was very isolationist. We didn't want to get involved. George Washington warned of getting involved with other nations, entangling alliances. Even in the 1930s, we were worried about helping Britain fight Hitler because we didn't want to get involved in a European war. So it's always been a strong element, that conservative element to it. So that's the basic of conservatism.
Why called conservatism?
They're trying to keep what's there, as opposed to liberalism, who are trying to expand greater government, trying to make more programs, trying to help more people do more things, very activist government. If you want to look at a great political example of conservatism, look at Ronald Reagan. He really harkened back to earlier America, kind of the John Wayne America, 1950s. This is the way things are. You know, it's morning in America, his great phrase, that we've lost our way, we need to get back. Pat Robertson has a book called America's Dates with Destiny, and he has all these great events in American history, but then starting with just about the New Deal, things start to go bad. And that's when you see the big rise of the liberal state, when we got much more liberal as a nation. So he kind of sees that as the demise. But the perfect example of liberalism is Bill Clinton talks about building a bridge to the 21st century. And you see this kind of sense of progression and moving forward and helping. You see Kennedy's New Frontier, and you see LBJ's Great Society, and you see these great new programs, where conservatives tend to just kind of hold the line and let's move back. And you see that in the modern presidential campaign of Pat Buchanan. Very much America against the world. America needs to hold back. We don't need to be helping other countries like East Timor and Yugoslavia. We need to close off our borders and be much more insular.
It would seem that right-wing politics tends to focus on strong military involvements, heavy spending for these, and yet very little government involvement in the sense of taxation. So here you have huge spending for defense budgets, but also an agenda of low taxation, and that these are generally associated with the Christian right-wing, perhaps social conservatism. And yet you have a political conservatism which says stronger laws, more prisons, less rights of the individual in the face of law enforcement agencies, these kinds of things, the infringement of rights by policing agencies for security reasons or for criminal actions. And yet you have a liberal stance, heavy on social action, heavy on welfare programs, these kinds of things. One of the things that always comes to my mind is that, like, for example, seeing here in California the Prop 187 thing, mm-hmm. that was the removal of access to public goods and services for health and education for immigrant workers. And that in many ways the conservative religious movement was behind this in supporting its passage, and yet wondering how, as a Christian, how we could say, is it right for us to have a whole class of workers that are paid very poorly, are brought here with our willingness to capitalize upon their labors, and then for us to deny them health care and somehow associate that with Christianity, and to say the liberal political movement is so dangerous that we can't associate with it. And in such, my thought immediately was, since when is greed higher than compassion on the Christian agenda? And how is it that these things equate and play out?
There's a couple things. One phrase that you hear a lot is individual responsibility, and that relates to their idea of less government. And you see this a lot in the Christian right. If you're a morally good person, if you're responsible, if you're willing and working hard, and if you help us with our ministry, you're going to be blessed and you're going to be wealthy and you're going to do better. So it's very much focused on the individual. And a lot of times, a lot of their politics isn't colored as much by their religion as you would think. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I have an article that's being published that looks at Martin Luther King and Pat Robertson and how they use their religion in the political realm. And one thing I found interesting is when you get to the topic of South Africa. I looked at the late 60s for King right before he was killed, and at Robertson around 88 to 90. But during that time, Nelson Mandela was in prison. Apartheid was the law. Martin Luther King was very strongly of the opinion that these people are being oppressed and that they are all made in God's image. And as Christians, it's our responsibility to see that all people are free and that they have equal rights because we're all created in God's image. We all need to have access to just the basic necessities of life. We don't have to have TVs and VCRs and DVD players, but we do need to have food and safe place to live. And he actually wanted to go to South Africa and applied for a permit to speak there. And of course, it was denied, so he never got to go, but that would have been interesting. Conversely, when Robertson ran for president in 1988, he was very much of the mind that the Cold War was very close to being a battle between God and the devil. And he said, in one speech, if the ANC, the African National Congress, gets control of South Africa, it'll become a communist nation. Well, now we can look back on it and say, well, obviously that didn't happen. The ANC is in control and it's not a communist nation. And he says this. He goes, people think South Africa's bad, but other nations are worse. And if the ANC gets to take over, it'll be a communist country like Cuba tomorrow who'll have missiles and be threatening us. And so for him, his fear of this greater, we can call it demonic evil, was more important than an individual suffering. Where King said, they're all created in God's image, so let's all give them freedom. Robertson said, I would agree that they're all created in God's image, but there's this great, big, oppressive evil. And so there can't be that much freedom there because this great, oppressive evil will sweep in if it is. So you kind of see that a lot. Or people of both political stripe, but especially some people in the Christian right, walk kind of the tightrope of believing certain things about individual liberty, but then still wanting strong social controls, which I've always found an interesting irony.
That's one of the things that kind of comes to mind here is, well, first off, the paradox of seeking liberty and justice for all, which seems a completely impossible goal to have simultaneous liberty for all and justice for all. Because if there's absolute liberty, persons can do whichever they please. And if that's the case, then there will be no justice. This schizophrenia in American thinking, wanting to have both ends of the spectrum, for example, I think of political conservatism saying, and with religious conservatism behind it, let's have government out of our faces and let's highly regulate drugs, alcohol, mm-hmm. Social behavior, those kinds of things, and how we can simultaneously have these agenda both of government non-involvement in the lives of individuals and strong government involvement in the lives of individuals. Government keep the hands off the money, but let's impose Christian ideals on our society by creating a strong government and a strong set of institutions to formalize Christian values and legalize those and then enforce those. And part of what I'm wondering is this movement back in true conservatism to what America was, or is this movement forward to an idealized America that could have been? And how is it that these two seemingly contradictory agenda, the political conservatism, plays out with religious conservatism?
You've asked me kind of an either-or question, and my answer is going to be neither. In my research, I've kind of discovered a nice dichotomy that you can use to kind of look at movements, religious-based political movements. They either tend to focus on personal righteousness issues, or they tend to focus on social justice issues. And by seeing which one they emphasize really tells you what other political beliefs you're going to believe. For example, looking at a man like Pat Robertson, whose father was a senator and in Congress for over 30 years, was very conservative. He was a Democrat, but actually holds the record for voting against New Deal programs the most of any Democrat. So he's very much against FDR and the New Deal order. So he gave his son this deep conservatism, even though his son is a Republican, but the conservatism's always been there. And so when he became a Christian, he has a lot of Christian beliefs, but yet the conservatism still stays. And that's the way it happens with a lot of people. Kind of the political ideology you develop when you're young stays there. Sometimes with religion, it gives a new twist. For example, Robertson, when he was running for president, talked about having a year of Jubilee and literally proposed it, said having a year of Jubilee would be a great way to keep America from having depressions and recessions. Said a capitalist economy is corrected by having a depression where the economy tanks out for a while and it builds back up. And the year of Jubilee comes from Leviticus, and it talks about every 50 years, the land goes back to the original owners, old debts are canceled, old slaves are set free. And I thought, in all the very socialistic programs Martin Luther King proposed, nothing came close to what Robertson was saying, yet people think he was very conservative. But this is an incredibly liberal idea. And he thought it would be a great way to relieve third world debt. We just canceled their debts.
Something that the Pope is proposing now.
Yes. But most people don't think that someone like Robertson would say that. It's like, well, it's because his religion, his conservative belief tells him the Bible is true. God says this should be done. And so we should do it as a country. Although the Bible...
It also says not to charge interest.
Also says not to charge interest. Yes, but the Bible never mentions if Israel ever did that, if they ever did have a year of jubilee,
which they probably didn't,
because you think that kind of thing would be noticed. So you see an interesting tension. Things swing back and forth. You look at Martin Luther King, who was incredibly liberal on most social issues, yet was still very much a sexist, and you wonder would he have changed if he hadn't have been assassinated, but still very much the view that women should stay in the home and they don't belong in the political campaigns and they need to raise our children, and very much that paternalistic kind of way, where Robertson, who by no means is a feminist, talks about having women in the military, and he talks about keeping families together out of the fear of what he calls the feminization of poverty. Several people call it that. That when families get divorced, the man's income skyrockets and the woman ends up very poor. And he was very concerned about that in his campaign. So you see an interesting mixture. And the problem is, a lot of journalists only have a day or a week to write a story on somebody, so they get the basic facts and write it out. But if you really take a time to look at somebody and their beliefs, you'll see a deep texture and different variances of belief and things that you can't always notice just by kind of glancing at it. American history is filled with these kinds of examples. The most popular radio Christian speaker in the 1930s was a man named Father Coughlin, who was an incredible anti-Semite racist priest who had a very popular radio show and ended up falling out with his views on what he saw as some of the positive things Adolf Hitler was doing. Now, you wouldn't see any Catholic priest talking about how great it was what Milosevic was doing in Yugoslavia or what was happening in East Timor. You wouldn't see any of that kind of thing. But on the same hand, some of the things Coughlin wanted to do were kind of socialist. So there was just an interesting spread. It's just always amazing to me. That's why I love the study of American religion, because it is so rich and just there's so many different things going on.
In the brief amount of time that we have left, do you see that there is, historically, in America, a Christian political stance? And if so, what would it be?
The short answer is no. There's been no one single Christian response, just like there's been no one single Christian group in America. It started out largely Protestant, but it became Catholic and Greek Orthodox, and it's been spreading. So no one central thing that I think is distinctly Christian in terms of political realm. But I think one thing people would be surprised to learn is that religious groups that get involved in politics tend to be much more progressive, much more positive. We just think of the Christian right and the moral majority of the past 20, 30 years as our prime example. But for most of history of America, it's been a very progressive, very liberalizing force socially for American people. And it tends to be, or at least it tended to be until very recently, the groups that were the most theologically conservative that brought the most positive social benefits to the country. The abolitionists, the ones uniting America in the Great Awakening, those kind of groups. Dwight Moody, who were very religiously conservative, were the ones who were bringing these great social movements forward. It was only until very recently where conservative ideology and conservative religion were wed together.
Oh, I wish we had time to find out from you exactly how those two got wed, what the romance was and what the engagement was. But perhaps we can have you back next time you're out on this coast. We'd love to have you again and discuss precisely that issue. In the meantime, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Until the next time we meet, this is Adam Ayers, along with Brad Johnson, David Marley, and this has been Interface.